WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 6th of March, 2024. My name is Arthur. We're going to start off the first half of the show with a Ellery Queen. This one's titled Mischief Maker. Had an original air date of the 15th of January, 1944.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I think tonight's mystery will keep you guessing. It's about a strange chain of anonymous letters. I call it The Adventure of the Mischief Maker.
Hubert. Hubert.
Yes, my dear?
Put that newspaper down and finish your breakfast.
Hmm? Oh, yes, yes, of course, dear. Bloat was jolly good this morning. My dear, for an American, you really perform miracles with a bloater.
For an American... Hubert Lester, you've been in this country long enough to stop being so patronizing.
Now, pet, I wasn't being anything of the sort.
I suppose I ought to get down on my knees to you because you deigned to marry an American girl.
Oh, I wouldn't put it that way.
You married 4 months. Already you're reading newspapers at my breakfast table.
But, darling, I was merely looking up the situation in tea. When Sir Eustace sent me here from London to take charge of the New York branch of Spofford Tea Limited, he said to me... Lester, old chap,
looking
said...
up the situation in tea, were you?
Mm-hmm.
You were looking up that movie star's photo, that's what. That hussy with the legs.
My love, I just happened to glance at it in passing.
Seems to me you just happened to glance at an awful lot of females, Hubert, since we've been married.
Oh, what utter nonsense, my dear. And even if I wanted to, which is rot, of course, you know I couldn't risk the scandal, my dear. I'd be given the sack, you know. Sir Eustace won't brook the least breath of scandal.
What about you and your secretary?
Me and my secretary? That spindle-shanked, weather-beaten antique, my dear. Now, really,
sweet. Well, maybe I'm wrong. Eat your bloater, dear.
Of course, darling. Oh, by the way, what was that letter that arrived in the morning post for you?
This letter? That's Mrs. Hubert Lester, 230 Hatton Avenue, New York City. Well, whoever wrote it certainly ought to fix his typewriter. Broken letters, out of line, some all smudgy.
Well, who's it from, pet?
Let's see. Mrs. Lester. Your husband, Hubert, is... I knew it.
Huh?
I knew it. Hubert just proves it.
Proves it? Proves what?
You this? Snake. You worm. You...
I need to see, but... Here, let me see that. Your husband is in love with his secretary. He's leading a double life. Signed, a friend. But I mean to
Spindle
say that...
Spindle-shanked, weather-beaten.
But, my love, you don't put credence in gossips who don't even sign their names. I scarcely know what my secretary looks like.
Oh, I'll bet.
Now, darling, I give you my sacred word.
Your sacred word. Out of my way, you Judas.
But, pet, where are you going?
I'm going to Reno. Two-time a respectable American girl, will you? Well, Hubert Lester, I'll get a divorce from you so fast that precious Sir Eustace of yours will think his New York representative was tarred and feathered and boiled in oil.
Now, Mr. Plunkett, to meet my son, the secretary, Nicky Porter.
How do you do?
Mr. Plunkett came here to headquarters yesterday morning, Ellery. He's back this morning for a report.
A report on what, Dad?
My son's a sucker for screwy cases, Mr. Plunkett. Tell him.
Well, Mr. Queen, it's sure a Lulu. Here, read this letter that come yesterday morning.
Read it, Nicky, aloud.
Goodness, what a bad machine this was typed on. Broken letters, dirty, out of line.
Never mind the typing, Miss Porter. Just read it.
It's addressed to the president of the Westside Bank, 315 Hatton Avenue, New York. It says, Dear Sir, the rent collector for your bank, Ethan A. Plunkett, is a thief. You're stealing rent money on properties the bank owns.
Signed, a friend.
You're the Ethan A. Plunkett this anonymous letter refers to?
That's me, Mr. Queen.
Well, I'm sure the president of the bank you work for doesn't believe this charge, Mr. Plunkett.
He don't, Miss Porter, seeing he's me.
Who's you?
Mr. Plunkett's only been posing as the realty representative of the Westside Bank, Nicky. Secretly, Mr. Plunkett's the president. Owns the bank, lock, stock, and barrel, and all its properties. Protective coloration, Mr. Queen. I got a slew of hungry relatives. If they knew I owned a bank, they'd make a pauper of me in no time.
But, Valerie, if Mr. Plunkett owns the bank, how could he be stealing rent money from the bank?
Obviously, the writer of this letter didn't know Mr. Plunkett owns the bank. Just tried to get him into trouble. Some crank.
That isn't our son. Billy.
Yeah, Inspector?
Come in here. You see, one of the properties Mr. Plunkett owns is a five-family brownstone in the west side.
I live there myself, Mr. Queen.
Oh, Vinny.
Yeah, Inspector.
Tell Ellery what you found out at Mr. Plunkett's house.
Oh, that cockeyed kiss. You see, Maestro, the inspector sent me over to 230 Hatton Avenue yesterday to see if anybody else living there got one of these letters signed A. Friend.
Someone else got one, Sergeant?
Yep. One of Mr. Plunkett's tenants and neighbors there is people named Lester. Mrs. Lester's hitched to this Hubert Lester, a British who's been in this country around 6 months. The playboy type. I mean, he'd like to be.
I know. A friend wrote Mrs. Lester that hubby's being untrue to her.
On the nose, Nicky. So Mrs. Lester packed up, and now she's heading for Reno.
My family have. Mm-hmm. Mr. Plunkett, who are the other tenants at 230 Hatton Avenue?
Well, there's Miss Bertha Lamb, an old maid.
And a bachelor named Hodge, Lewis Hodge.
And a family named Drayton, husband, wife, and 15-year-old daughter. Drayton's a psychiatrist.
Mr. Plunkett, Mr. and Mrs. Hubert Lester, Miss Bertha Lamb, spinster, Mr. Lewis Hodge, bachelor, and Dr. Drayton and family. I've got it all down, Ellis.
Fine, Nicky. Mr. Plunkett, does anyone in the house bear a grudge against you and the Lesters?
Mighty funny you ask that, Mr. Queen. My janitor there, Joe's a big sorehead. Pretty tough egg, Joe. Born on Hester Street in New York here. He'd have been a gangster, I guess, if he'd had more brains. What's Joe sore about, Mr. Plunkett? Well, seems like Joe didn't get Christmas presents enough from most of the tenants, including me. It slipped my mind.
So Joe sends anonymous letters?
It's hardly a laughing matter, Nicky. One of these letters has already separated a husband and wife.
Yes, anonymous letters have done a lot of mischief in this world. They've even caused death.
Dad, I think we'll look into this. We'll begin by asking Dr. Drayton, Miss Lamb, and Mr. Hodge if they've received letters from the mischief maker who signs himself a friend. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the beginning of our mystery. We'll be back in just a moment to tell you more, but first, Ernest Chappell.
Oh, for the life of a fireman. Bells clanging, men sliding down poles, fire trucks racing through traffic. Nothing but thrills and excitement. Oh, but that's not the way Mr. Thomas Byrne of Elmhurst, Long Island, tells it. He writes,
we're called out on the average of twice every day. Some of the fires don't amount to much, but when we get in on a real blaze, then I've got to be quick on the trigger, ready for anything. Besides working under a nervous strain, there are the discomforts of going through heavy smoke and fumes and getting drenched by water from the hoses. Sometimes, after a session like that, I've got a pounding headache. My stomach feels upset and my nerves are on edge. But I can count on Bromo Seltzer to help me feel better fast. A great many of us down at the firehouse keep a bottle of Bromo Seltzer in our lockers all the time.
And that's a mighty good idea for everybody. So, friends, tomorrow, get a bottle of Bromo Seltzer for your medicine chest. Then the next time you're suffering from a common sick headache, you'll know where to go for quick, effective relief. Now, back to our story. An hour later, the Queens, Nicky, and Sergeant Beely are standing before an apartment door at 230 Hatton Avenue, New York City. Inspector Queen has rung the bell marked B.V. Drayton, M.D. Suddenly.
Yes? Dr. Drayton?
Yes?
May we see you a moment privately?
All four of you?
Well, I'm pretty busy.
Police.
Oh, come in. And sit down, please.
Thank you, Doctor.
Now, what's the matter?
Dr. Drayton, we're investigating a slight case of anonymous letter writers.
Anonymous
Two people living in this house got anonymous letters yesterday morning.
Did you receive such a letter, Dr. Drayton?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Let's see it, Doctor.
Very well. Here.
Same broken type, out of line, smudgy.
Typed on the same machine as the other two.
Dr. Drayton, your 15-year-old daughter Sissy is in serious danger. Take a tip from a friend. Dr. Drayton, why didn't you report this to the police?
Your own daughter in danger.
Nonsense. My wife was frightened, too, but as a psychiatrist, I'm quite familiar with anonymous letter writing.
Really, Doctor? You mean it's a psychopathic manifestation?
Very often. We call it anonymous graphomania. It's a form of hysteria. Not a crime or a prank, but an illness. The writer of this letter is probably a neurotic, maladjusted, emotionally unstable individual whom it would be criminal to prosecute. Well, I've handled lots of them.
Very interesting, Dr. Drayton. Haven't you found that anonymous letter writers are often of a certain type, age, and sex?
Well, yes.
What type, Harry?
I'm sure Dr. Drayton's more competent to explain.
If it's a case of true anonymous graphomania, why, the writer is often an adolescent.
Of which sex, Doctor?
Why, female. Neurotic, adolescent, female.
Why is it that every time something bad happens, men blame women? I'll bet just as many nasty boys
might... Nicky, Doctor, we'll keep this letter, if we may.
I'd prefer... Yes, of course.
Good day, Dr. Drayton.
Good day.
Thanks, Doc.
Good day.
Say, you know what I think?
Not yet, Sergeant. So that's letter number three. Dad, let's call Miss Bertha Lamb, spinster, and see if she's got number four. Miss Lamb.
Go on, Innie.
Here, madam, keep that door open. We're from police headquarters.
I bought a ticket to the policeman's ball.
We're not selling anything, Miss Lamb.
You let us come into your apartment for a few minutes, madam.
I will not. How do I know you're a policeman? What's this painted girl doing with you? Painted girl? Why, no.
Whoa, Nicky. Sergeant, show Miss Lamb your shield.
Here. If you want to see the inspector's, his is gold. Satisfied?
Well, come in. What do you want?
Have you received an anonymous letter, Miss Lamb?
Anonymous letter? I should say not.
We haven't.
Three of your neighbors have received such letters, Miss Lamb.
Well, considering my neighbors, I'm not surprised. You take the Lesters, that Englishman, and his vulgar American wife. She's a nasty woman. And as for her husband, you just let me catch Mr. Hubert Lester making eyes at me.
At you, Miss Lamb?
Well, you better not. I have the blood of American pioneers in my veins.
What about Mr. Plunkett?
That awful yank rent collector? He lives in one of the apartments, so you'd think he'd see to it my bathroom plumbing stick. But not Ethan Plunkett. Why, from the way he won't spend their money, you think he owned the bank.
Yeah, wouldn't you?
And Dr. Drayton and his family, Miss Lamb.
Oh, horrible people. Mrs. Drayton's an absolute pill. Comes from the Midwest somewhere. Always knocking New York. And Dr. Drayton, they're both in the same hometown. Why, he ought to be rolling pills back where he come from. And nosy? I don't know how many times he's asked me about my dreams.
I could tell him your dreams, Lammy Pie.
Very
painted girl.
Miss Lamb.
That 15-year-old daughter of theirs, Sissy. If ever I saw a goon in my life, that child is one. Absolutely weird. Very homely. Wears thick glasses, stays home all the time, reading nasty books. I tell you, that girl gives me the shivers.
What
you
do you give her?
And Miss Lamb.
The only person in this entire house fit to be a decent person's neighbor is that grand Mr. Hodge. So nice. A bachelor, you know. Keeps to himself, poor man. So shy.
Thanks.
You know, I've often wondered why...
Well, thanks, Miss Lamb. We've got to be going.
But let me tell you about Mr. Hodge. He never throws wild parties.
Let's go for Pete's sake.
The perfect gentleman, so I know that he would...
So Miss Bertha Lamb didn't get a letter. Hmm?
Interesting. Let's see if her dear Mr. Hart did.
Bring Hodge's bell again, Ellery.
Right, Dad.
Ellery, where'd you send Sergeant Veeley?
Downstairs to fetch Joe the janitor.
Where is this Hodge, anyway?
Not home. We'll have to come back later, Dad.
And I tell you, they ain't got it. Give me that.
Lock, don't get tough, Joe. Hey, folks, look what I found.
Billy, what are you doing with that typewriter?
Whose is it? Where'd you find it, Sergeant?
In a trash bin in the basement when I went down to get this tough mug janitor. I almost passed it up as a piece of junk.
Certainly an old baby, Ellery. Think that's the typewriter?
No doubt about it, Nicky. This is the machine used to type those anonymous letters. Yes,
identical
characters, out of line.
How did typewriter come to be in your basement, Miss House?
And who are you, Grandpa?
Oh, wise guy. Ready?
Clock. I don't know. I never seen it before.
Did you, too? Joe, did you receive an anonymous letter yesterday morning?
What's that?
A letter with no name, just signed a friend.
I don't get no letter. I'm just the janitor.
You're just smart enough to play dumb.
Joe.
Yeah?
How'd you make out this Christmas?
I'll bet you got oodles of presents from people in the house, Joe.
Presents? Nah, they're all tightwad. That Berta Lansdane, she gave me $2, but not another dime from nobody else. Be a good janitor. Work like a horse. Comes Christmas time, nothing. I got a good mind up to collect that garbage.
Yes, we heard you appeased, Joe. Billy, send this typewriter downtown to be fired. Let's go to some restaurant around here where we can have some lunch and talk this pesky case over.
Here's Sergeant Dealey back.
Phone headquarters, Sergeant.
What's your report, Dealey?
That's like Ellery figured, Inspector. The boys didn't dig up a single other letter signed A Friend anywhere else in the neighborhood. Now let me eat, will you?
So only the tenants at 230 Hatton Avenue got anonymous letters. Well, son, with the typewriter found in the basement of the house where the writer tried to dispose of it, and the basement being accessible only to the tenants.
Yes, Dad, it means the letter writer is one of the tenants of 230 Hatton Avenue.
Think that somebody go to all that trouble just maliciously to make mischief.
But how do we know? Maybe he's only making it look like crank stuff.
To hide some other motive? Would be, really. Oh, say, there's Mr. Plunkett just walking in.
Mr. Plunkett.
Oh. Hi, folks.
Hi.
Just come in for some lunch. My bank's just on the next block, you know. Well, find out who's writing those letters, Inspector.
We're still working on it, Mr. Plunkett.
We haven't even been able to see all your tenants at 230 Hatton Avenue. Lewis Hodge didn't answer our ring. Oh, what do you know about Hodge, Mr. Plunkett?
Nice fella, Mr. Queen. Quiet, minds his own business. I wish all my tenants was like that fella Hodge.
I wonder if he got one of those letters.
Hodge? Of course he did.
You didn't?
He did?
Oh, is that so?
Didn't I mention it? Thought I did. Must be getting old.
How do you know Hodge got one of the letters, Mr. Plunkett?
Because I saw it in his letter box yesterday morning with my own eyes, Inspector. Couldn't mistake that typewriting. Same's on the envelope I got.
Then, of course, you don't know what it said, Mr. Plunkett. What's Lewis Hodge do for a living?
Nothing right now. Fact is, he's behind in his rent. Only last week I said to him, Mr. Hodge, I ain't a man to kick a fellow when he's down.
Good Lord.
Hillary, what'd you jump up for?
What's the matter, son?
Hodge out of work, behind his rent, facing eviction, received one of those mischief-making letters yesterday morning. Come on, Mr. Plunkett. We've got to get into Hodge's apartment at once.
Hodge still doesn't answer.
Better unlock his door, Mr. Plunkett.
But I didn't tell him nothing about evicting him. Had to jog him up, didn't I? Son, it can't seem to...
Sergeant, unlock the door. Take the key from Mr. Plunkett.
Sure.
Nicky, you and Mr. Plunkett better stay out in the hall till we take a look.
Here we are.
We'll be right out here.
Living room.
Empty. That letter on the table.
Looks like one of the same crop.
It is. Typed on that old wreck of a machine.
To Lewis Hodge, this address. Mr. Hodge, the cops are watching you. You can't get away. Signed, a friend.
Some friend. Where is Hodge, anyway?
That door over there. Must be his bedroom. It's locked.
We better force it there.
On one side, gents. Again? There he is.
On the bed.
Dead. For at least 24 hours, I'd say.
Shot through the left temple.
Gun still in his hand.
Windows and doors locked from the inside.
So it can't be anything but suicide. That blasted letter drove Hodge to suicide.
Yes. At last, our friend, the mischief maker, has caused a death.
Harry.
What's up, Dad?
Taken us 2 days, but we finally identified Lewis Hodge.
Identified him? Well, who was he?
An escaped convict serving a life sentence for murder. Born in Cincinnati and was doing his stretching in an Ohio pen when he managed to make a break. He's been holding up in New York.
Yeah, his real name was James Lewis Hodgkiss.
Escaped convict. No wonder Mr. Hodge was such a model tenant.
Yes, he must have been at the end of his rope. Broke, afraid he might be recognized and sent back to prison. Hodgkiss undoubtedly lived in constant fear. That anonymous letter saying the police were watching him broke his nerve and took the easy way out.
How did the letter writer know who he was?
We'll probably never know, Nicky. May have recognized him from having seen his photo somewhere. Or it might have been a complete shot in the dark.
Anyway, we're back where we started from. Who sent the letter that drove Hodge to suicide? Who wrote to Mrs. Lester and broke up her marriage? Who wrote Dr. Drake? and his 15-year-old daughter was in danger. Who wrote to old man Plunkett trying to get him in trouble with the bank?
A friend, Sergeant. I think it's hopeless.
Dad, have you got those letters on file here?
Yes, sir. Here.
The envelope, too, Dad. Oh, thanks.
What are you looking them over again for, son?
You've examined them all before, Ellen.
Oh, I ought to have my eyes examined.
What do you mean?
Right.
Here it was all this time, and I didn't see it.
Didn't see what, Maestro?
Look at these four envelopes. Don't you see there's one thing all four addresses have in common?
There. What thing, sir?
A clue. A clue in the addresses. The same clue.
In the addresses? Well, the one to Mr. Plunkett's address to the bank. The ones to Mrs. Lester, Dr. Drayton, and Lewis Hodge are addressed to the apartment house. The addresses are all correct, Ellen.
Wait. There's one erasure on each envelope.
Right, Dad. And in the same place in each case.
Where? Say, that's right.
Some typewriter character. One character has been erased just after the house number on each envelope.
Between the house number and the name of the street.
I wonder what was erased. Can't make it out, son, can you?
No, Dad, but I know what was erased just the same.
You do?
Yes, and that tells me the identity of the mischief maker who wrote these anonymous letters. And now, let's solve our mystery. Miss Bean, who wrote the anonymous letter?
I think Dr. Drayton. And why do you think so? Well, because he hesitated so much in answering the questions and he didn't report his letter to the police force as the others did.
Thank you, Miss Bean. Now, Mr. Cusack, who do you think wrote the anonymous letter?
I think it was Dr. Drayton's daughter, Mr. Queen, who was described by Miss Lamb as being very weird.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that?
Well, Miss Lamb said that she stayed home all the time, reading strange books. And I think she probably found access to her father's scientific books, and that her imagination started to work.
Thank you, Mr. Cusack and Miss Dean. You'll find in just a moment whether you've solved our mystery correctly. And now, Ernest Chappell.
Friends, for United States Cadet Nurse Corps information, write in care of Box 88, New York City. Now, if you can qualify, you'll do your country a great service and build yourself a future through the United States Cadet Nurse Corps. And don't forget the March of Dimes. Send your dimes and dollars now to help fight infantile paralysis.
Four anonymous letters all came the same morning. They must all have been typed at the same time. We also know that in addressing the four envelopes, the writer typed a single character of some sort between the house number and the name of the street. And that in all four cases, before mailing the letters, he erased that character. Now, what were those typewriter characters he put in and then took out? Were they different characters in each case?
I'd say it was the same character in each case, because at least three of the four addresses were identical. The erasure occurs in exactly the same spot on the four envelopes.
Right, Dad. So it was the same character.
So what character was it, Elf?
Let's figure it out together. What are the possibilities? Well, the erased character could have been a numeral.
Like 1, 2, or 6.
Yes, or it could have been a letter of the alphabet.
Like A, B, or X.
Right, or it could have been a special mark.
A dollar sign or a percent sign.
Or any of the other special keys on a typewriter. Or finally, it could have been a punctuation mark. Now, the erasure in each case occurred just after the house number. Could the character have been a numeral?
But that would mean that the writer originally typed the wrong house number, Ellery. One with four numbers instead of three, like 2305 instead of 230.
Exactly, Nicky. How could the writer have typed the wrong house number? You know he was someone in 230 Hatton Avenue. He certainly knew his own address. So the erased character wasn't a numeral. Was it a letter of the alphabet?
Might have been. The erasures are between the house number and the name of the street, so they could have been a wrong letter to start the name of the street.
Don't be a fool, Davy. Huh? If he knew his house number, then he knew the name of the street, too. Better.
Dad's right, Sergeant. So the erased character wasn't a letter of the alphabet, either.
Well, it certainly couldn't have been a dollar sign or a mark like that.
No, Nicky. A special mark in that particular spot, an address, would make no sense at all.
Okay, so the character erased must have been a punctuation mark. The same punctuation mark. But which punctuation mark?
Well, Dad, do we use punctuation marks after the street number in an address?
We? Who's we?
We, the people. We, Americans.
Americans? Certainly not.
You mean there's countries where they do?
Yes, Sergeant. In certain foreign countries, it's accepted practice to put a comma after the street number. 230 Hatton Avenue, citizens of those countries would write, 230 Hatton Avenue. So I knew the erased characters must have been common. They'd been erased after typing them in. The writer realized they betrayed his foreign origin. Question. Who at 230 Hatton Avenue is not an American? Mr. Plunkett, a Yank. The Draytons, Midwesterners. Miss Bertha Lamb, of American pioneers. Louis Hodge, or Hodgkin, born in Cincinnati, Ohio. Joe the janitor, born in Hester Street, New York City. Mrs. Lester, an American. Hubert Lester, her husband.
An Englishman.
Right, Nicky. Hubert Lester, in this country only 6 months. Not long enough to have broken himself of his English punctuation habits. So I knew it was Hubert Lester who wrote that letter to his wife, accusing himself of being untrue to her.
But why, Maestro?
Well, Sergeant, obviously Lester decided he'd made a serious error in marrying Mrs. Lester. And this was his devious way of getting her to divorce him, instead of giving her the actual grounds which might have caused the scandal and the loss of his job.
And why did Lester send those letters to the other people in the house?
Obviously there to divert suspicion from himself. To make the writer seem to be someone of a diseased or disturbed mind, a chronic and indiscriminate mischief maker. I imagine Lester had in mind putting the blame on Dr. Drayton's unhappy, neurotic 15-year-old daughter, type often responsible for anonymous letters. Yes, Lester is a mischief maker in this case, Dad. I'm sure you can dig up some charge to make him pay for it.
Colgate.
There we have Ellery Quinn's Mischief Maker. That had an original air date of the 15th of January, 1944. I didn't know too much about this show. I've seen it kicking around in my digital library. And I couldn't find anything on the Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio, because I'd overlooked the fact that it's titled The Adventures of Ellery Queen, not simply Ellery Queen. I didn't realize either that you could betray your foreign origins by using erratic punctuation when writing letters here in the States, as if anybody does that anymore. This is, listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Let's go ahead and do an FCC obligation here. Thanks for listening.
My husband had a gun. Him and his friends would go shooting. When he stored the gun, he didn't know. In a million years, we never thought that Emily could. There's a hole in our family that can never, ever be filled.
65 Americans a day die by gun suicide. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn more at infamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council. For the second half of the program today, I'm going to play the show's Our Miss Brooks. I played one of these a couple of weeks ago for the first time. It's kind of interesting. It's got pretty good reviews in terms of radio and the radio did. I don't know how much the TV show did. It had a concurrent airing. This one's called Overseas Job Network, and the original air date of this was the 4th of March, 1951.
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Palmolive Shave Creams for a smoother, more comfortable way to shave, bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, when you're living and working away from home, a good friend and confidant comes in mighty handy. Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, is fortunate in having just such a friend in her landlady. Last Friday at breakfast, Miss Brooks confided in Mrs. Davis about her Thursday date.
I was out with Mr. Boynton last night, Mrs. Davis.
Oh, you don't have to tell me that, Connie. I could tell when I went in to wake you up this morning.
How?
You were squeezing your pillow so hard, half the feathers popped out.
Oh. No wonder I dreamt that I was captured by Indians. We had quite an exciting time, though, before Mr. Boynton took me home.
What did you do?
Well, he said he'd like to go to a movie, so I very subtly steered him to the Strand, where they're showing Valentino.
Oh, is that the one about Rudolph Valentino, the great lover?
It isn't about Jake LaMotta. It's really a very good movie, and I was hoping Mr. Boynton would take a slight hint and get into the mood.
Did the scheme work, Connie?
Did it work? Why, halfway through the most torrid love scene, two ushers had to ask Mr. Boynton to leave.
Oh, really, Connie? What did he do?
He giggled so hard he dropped his popcorn.
Don't worry, Connie. You may find romance sooner than you think. That is, if you take advantage of the article I read in this morning's paper.
What article?
It says that Mr. Jacques Bouvet of the French public school system is here in America to import teachers to France. He arrived at Madison yesterday, and he's interested in any American instructors who can help streamline French educational methods.
Well, good for him. But why an American teacher should go traipsing off to France to teach is beyond me.
But Mr. Beauvais says that as an incentive, the salary would be just double your present one.
Well, don't stand there. Pack my bag. Double my salary? And I presume they'd pay all traveling expenses.
Definitely.
Well, then all I have to do is to sell myself to Monsieur Beauvais. Where is he staying while he's in town, Mrs. Davis?
At the Empire Hotel.
Does the article say how long a teacher would be expected to stay in France?
At least 1 year, Connie.
Oh, then I'd better forget about it. It isn't just Mr. Boynton I'd miss. I'd be lonesome for you, Mrs. Davis, and Harriet and Walter Denton and all the swell kids at school.
I know, Connie. Then there's your principal, Mr. Conklin.
Well, don't stand there. Pack my bag.
Look, Connie. Even though we'd all miss you, too, I'd like to remind you of the old saying, absence makes the heart grow fonder. If you do go away for a year, think of what your reunion will be like.
Yes, I can picture it now. I trip lightly down the gangplank, and there on the dock stands Mr. Boynton. As our eyes meet, the scene is charged with romance. And when he speaks, it takes a long moment before his passionate words penetrate my consciousness.
What passionate words, Connie?
Long time no see, Miss Brooks. What have you done to your car, Walter? It looks different this morning. Prettier.
That's because you're in it, lovely one. I purposely picked you up early this morning so you could take advantage of the bulletin I have for you.
Bulletin?
Yes, ma'am. I read an article in the paper that says a high official in the French public school system is in town, looking for teachers. A Mr. Jacques Bouvet.
That's Jacques Bouvet, Walter.
How do you know him, Miss Brooks?
Mrs. Davis introduced me to the article this morning.
Oh, aren't you excited? He's offering teachers an all-expense trip to Gay Paris. That's short for France.
I know he is. That's why I've got to get to Mr. Conklin's office.
Why Mr. Conklin's office?
So I can get permission to take a little time off this morning. I'd like to see Mr. Bouvet before he's mobbed by the other teachers.
But Miss Brooks, you know how old Marblehead Mr. Conklin is when it comes to giving people time off.
Well, I'll just have to think of some legitimate sounding alibi, I guess. Now let's see. What sounds like a truthful tissue of lies?
You should never have brought this paper to my office, Harriet. The article about that Frenchman, Bouvet, raiding our schools for teachers has upset me terribly.
But why, Daddy?
Because I know school teachers, that's why. His offer of traveling expenses and more money will have them flocking to his wallet like moths to a flame. They'll follow him to France like those dim-witted children who followed the Pied Piper of Hamelin.
But, Daddy, Monsieur Bouvet is not only looking for teachers. It says in the last paragraph that he's also offering high school principals double salary and all traveling expenses.
Ah, Paris in the spring. The Champs-Élysées, burgeoning blossoms in the Bois de Boulogne. Hand me that paper, please.
Here you are.
It says Monsieur Jacques Bouvet, who is staying at the Empire Hotel, and it's been... Further details in later edition. Run down to the newsstand and fetch me the latest one, Harriet.
But, Daddy, you wouldn't let anything tempt you into leaving Madison, would you?
Calm yourself, my dear. I have no thought of succumbing to the siren song of filthy lucre. Moreover, I intend to see to it that there is no exodus from my staff. If I catch any member of Madison's faculty making a beeline for the Empire Hotel, I'll see that... Come in. Now, you run along, fetch that paper, Harriet.
All right, Daddy. Hi, Miss Brooks.
Hi, Harriet.
Bye, Miss Brooks.
Bye, Harriet.
And what brings you to my office so early, Miss Brooks?
An emergency, Mr. Conklin. I've got to make a beeline for the Empire Hotel.
Oh, you do. Do you mind telling me why before you buzz off?
Well, I've just got to get over there, sir. You see, I...
Let me help you. Perhaps someone close to you, some relative of whom you're exceedingly fond, lies ill in the Empire Hotel.
Ill? Why, yes, sir, that's exactly it. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, well, don't worry about that. I'll shove them back in a minute. That is, just which one of your relatives is it?
It's my grandmother, Mr. Conklin. She's terribly ill.
Poor dear soul. Perhaps she'd feel better if you informed her of a rather startling fact. Namely, the Empire Hotel is a recently erected annex of the Empire Athletic Club, and it's strictly for men.
So is Grandma. Popular. You see, sir, she works at the Empire Hotel. She's a telephone operator there. And yesterday she had a terrible accident.
An accident?
Yes, sir. It seems one of the other girls didn't show up, and Granny had to stay at the switchboard all during her lunch hour. Well, finally, the manager brought her a plate of spaghetti.
Spaghetti, Miss Brooks?
Well, sir, between her being so hungry and the switchboard being so busy, Granny got all excited and ate up three long-distance calls.
What a catastrophe. But, Miss Brooks, I have a suggestion to make. Supposing I accompany you to the Empire Hotel, it'll be a nice surprise for your grandmother.
Oh, but, Mr. Conklin,
I'll just burst into her room and say, Grandma, what a big mustache you have.
What?
And Grandma, what a big fat bankroll to be offering double salaries to teachers to lure them out of the country. And Granny, dear, why on earth are you registered here as Jacques Bouvet? Well, Miss Brooks, is the jig up or isn't the jig up?
Charleston, Charleston. Well, I didn't dare leave school during the morning session, but at lunchtime, I joined Mr. Boynton in the cafeteria and told him all about Monsieur Bouvet. When he heard that I was contemplating a trip abroad, Mr. Boynton was grief-stricken, and with ill-concealed panic, he finally managed to say...
A year in France would do you a world of good.
Yes, I guess it would. But, Mr. Boynton, a year is a long time. I sort of expected you to say you'd miss me.
Oh, that goes without saying. I often think of how much we've meant to each other, and... Well, you might not believe this, Miss Brooks, but in the 4 or 5 years we've known each other...
4 years, 7 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days.
Well, yes. Well, in all that time, I've never once... That is... Well, I...
Yes, Mr. Boynton, you never once what?
You're the only girl I've ever taken to the zoo.
You've no idea what a feeling of security that gives me.
It, may not seem like a very romantic locale, but many's the time as we stood outside those cages, I got some pretty bold thoughts.
You wished you were inside? Oh, we have had some good times, Mr. Boynton. And if I do go abroad, I'll miss you more than just a little.
That goes both ways. But there's a silver lining in every cloud, you know. Remember, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And when you returned, I'd be the first one to meet you at the boat. Yes, ma'am, I'd be right there on that dock as you trip down the gangplank.
And what would you say, Mr. Boynton?
Say? Well, I don't know offhand, but it wouldn't be anything teary or sentimental. Oh, I'd probably just take your hand and get off some witty remark or other.
Like what?
Well, like, long time no see.
Oh, that is a wham-doodle of a crack. But perhaps we'd better drop the subject, Mr. Boynton. After all, my going to France is purely conjectural. Monsieur Bouvet may not even pay any attention to the message I left for him.
Message?
Yes, since women are barred from the Empire Hotel, I phoned and left my name and address at the desk. Mr. Bouvet was out, so I just left word that if he wanted a good English teacher for overseas duty, he could interview me at my place this evening.
Well, everything happens for the best, I suppose. Still, this Bouvet has a lot of nerve to expect American teachers to go traipsing off to France to teach.
He's offering all travel expenses and double salary.
I wonder if he'd be interested in a biology teacher. You know, it might be quite a rewarding experience at that, to teach abroad for a while.
Pardon me, Mr. Boynton, but I've got an important message for Miss Brooks.
Well, go right ahead, Walter.
Harriet just took a call for you in the principal's office, Miss Brooks.
Oh, who was it?
Mrs. Davis. She called to say that Monsieur Bouvet phoned, and he said he'd be over at your house at 8 o'clock tonight.
Oh, that's wonderful, Walter.
Wait. In the late edition of the paper, it says that he's only accepting teachers who have a first-hand knowledge of France and its people and who speak the language fluently.
Fluently? But I haven't spoken any French since high school, and I majored in Spanish at college.
I've forgotten most of the French I ever learned also. I guess we're in the same boat, Miss Brooks.
Well, start paddling, Mr. Boynton. We're up the same creek, too. Well, it's almost 8 o'clock, Mrs. Davis. Monsieur Bouvet should be here any minute.
But, Connie, you said yourself you don't know enough about French to read a perfume bottle. How do you expect to land a job teaching over there?
If I get the job, Mrs. Davis, I'll have time to take a refresher course before I commence teaching. Now, don't worry about me. I'll get by this interview somehow.
If it's what you want, Connie, I can only wish you luck. I'll go make some tea now. If you need me for anything, just call.
All right, Mrs. Davis. Uh-oh, that's him. Coming!
Bonsoir. I am Jacques Bouvet.
Oh, yes. I mean, oui. Entrez, monsieur.
Merci. You, I presume, are la belle Brooks.
I'm not anybody else, la butte. let me take your coat and beanie. A beret. I'll hang them right here, Monsieur Bouvet. Now, if you'll follow me into the living room. Now, shall we sit over here on the sofa?
Bon. Now, tell me, if you will, something about your background. You are acquainted with Paris?
Paris? I always think of it as my second home.
Oh, you've been there.
I've never really left there, mentally. Oh, the boulevards, the cafes.
If you are so much of a Parisian at heart, I would wager that most of all you miss the Bois de Boulogne.
I cry when I think of it. That woman made me the best hats I ever owned.
Hats? But the Bois de Boulogne is a city park.
Well, that's what I like about Paris. A park can have the same name as a milliner. could I get you something, Monsieur Bouvet? Tea will be ready very soon, or would you rather have coffee?
Oh, nothing now, thanks. I just like to get, how you say, acquainted. But why should I struggle so with the English? You have the French, no?
I have a little, yes.
Ah, bon. Dites-moi alors, cette photographie-là, sur la table, c'est votre père?
Oh, oui.
Et l'autre photographie, c'est votre mari?
Oui.
Oh, je suis très content.
Oui, oui.
Pardonnez-moi, Connie. The tea is ready.
What? Oh, Mrs. Davis, this is Monsieur Bouvet.
Oh, merci, monsieur. I'll put the tea sur la table. Now, if you'll excuse moi, I'd like to speak with Miss Brooks privately for one moment. Come here, Connie.
All right, Mrs. Davis. Excuse moi, too, Monsieur Bouvet.
Certainement.
What is it, Mrs. Davis?
It's evident that I remember more of my high school French than you do. You've made a terrible mistake.
What did I do?
When Mr. Bouvet pointed to that picture of Mr. Conklin, he asked you if he was your father, and you said yes.
Oh, no.
Then when he pointed to Mr. Boynton's picture and asked if he was your husband, you said yes again.
Mr. Boynton? My husband? What am I laughing at?
What happened to either of us?
You've got to go back and tell Mr. Bouvet the truth.
What? And let him know I don't understand French? I'm sorry, Mrs. Davis, but I've got to bluff this thing through until I land that job.
As you wish, Connie, but I'm going into my room and lie down. This operation is too nerve-wracking for me.
I'll let you know how I come out, Mrs. Davis. Oh, you're looking at my photographs, monsieur.
Oui, madame, but perhaps I should talk the English. It will help me in my interviews with other Americans, n'est-ce pas?
Oh, pa.
Your husband is very charming, but one thing I do not understand. Why you call yourself Miss Brooks when he signs his picture Monsieur Boynton?
Well, here in America, we girls who teach school are allowed to use our maiden names. Ah. But I do hope you'll have the opportunity to meet Mr. Boynton. He's a charming person. And so devoted, so thoughtful, and so affectionate. So come in. It's not locked. Entree.
Good evening, Miss Brooks.
Mr. Boynton.
I hope you don't mind my... Oh, you have company.
Monsieur Boynton, allow me to congratulate you. You have a very charming wife.
I have? Where?
Oh! Dear me, isn't he a scream? Sense of humor, darling.
Your husband is funny.
Funniest thing since murders in the Rue Morgue. Give me your hat, dear. I'll explain later, Mr. Boynton. Just smile.
All right.
You are a man after my own heart, Mr. Boynton. Devil may care. And your wife has told me how affectionate you are.
Affectionate?
Well, don't just stand there. Kiss me, you fool.
Please, Miss Brooks, please.
Listen to him beg. Well, I'm all puckered, dearest. Let's have it.
Oh, how romantic. But permit me to make the introduction. I am Monsieur Jacques Bouvet.
Monsieur Bouvet, but of course... Je suis très joyeuse. Bonsoir, mon ami.
How do you like that? I pucker and he kisses him.
Monsieur Bouvet, I've always wanted to teach biology in Gay Perry. You alone can make my fondest dream come true.
Well, frankly, I have several biology teachers already contracted. Somehow, Perry seems to lend itself to biology.
And vice versa.
But of course, if I accept your wife, it would be a shame to separate you, especially if you are really so madly in love with her.
In love with her? Rather would I lose my life than my wife.
Comment?
Miss Brooks.
Oui?
Pucker up again, mon chéri.
Why, Pierre Boynton. Here I am.
Oh, wait. There will be time for that later.
Marshall plan or no Marshall plan? This guy has got to go.
What is it you want to tell us, monsieur?
Well, I have come to the conclusion that married couples are best for my purpose. Single teachers might get lonesome after a short while, and then, poof, back to America they come, leaving me clutching a valise.
Clutching a valise?
Holding the bag. You won't have to worry about that with us. We'll stay the full time.
Oh, but of course it is only fair to tell you I have interviewed other couples, some married 10, 11 years, and with big families. The priority will go, of course, to those who are married the longest time.
Oh, we've been married a very long time.
How long?
Real long.
Real, real long.
The door was open, so I just... Oh, I didn't know you had guests, Miss Brooks.
Oh, that's all right, Walter.
Yes, come on in, Walter.
Monsieur Bouvet, I'd like to present our youngest son, Walter.
What?
Isn't he a doll? Now go out into the kitchen and feed your fat little face.
Miss Brooks!
You heard your mother, son. We're discussing business with Monsieur Bouvet.
Oh, you're Monsieur Bouvet.
Oh, oui, oui.
Oh, bonsoir, monsieur. Comme entendez-vous, say swore.
Translation. Goodbye, Mr. Bouvet. I've got to feed my fat little face.
You are quite a family.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Just stop by. Oh, you have company, Miss Brooks.
The more the merrier. Do come in.
I recognize you from your photograph, monsieur. You are Papa.
Papa?
And you have a lovely daughter, monsieur. Such a sweet face. Just gaze upon her.
Gaze upon her? My daughter's at home.
But of course she's at home. I have been talking with her for the last 10 minutes.
Sir, either you have an extremely loud voice, or you're as wacky as a dodo bird.
Qu'est-ce que c'est dodo bird?
Oh, it's just a colloquialism, sir. Dad here is a great little kidder.
Want some tea, Daddy dear?
Daddy dear?
I'll get it for you if you want me to, Grandpa.
What's going on here?
I was just going to escort Monsieur Bouvet to the door.
Monsieur Bouvet? Oh, I should have known. Bonsoir, mon ami. Je suis très joyeuse.
Well, there's no use talking. I've got to get myself a tuxedo.
Monsieur Bouvet, I'll come right to the point. At first, I refused to be tempted, but as one of the nation's more efficient high school principals, I feel I owe it to your country to volunteer my services until your educational system is once again flourishing.
That is a most kind, monsieur.
Of course, I'll be frank with you, sir. I'm also interested in the fact that you're offering double salary.
Oh, that? Oh, I'm afraid, monsieur, the American press has made a slight, misquoting.
What did they misquoting?
Well, you see, we are offering double your present salary, but it is not in dollars. It is in francs.
In francs? That's much less than we're receiving now.
Oh, Wilbur, think of the experience. Now, if you will all want to sign up, I will get the paper.
A moment, Monsieur Bouvet. I'd like to hold a little caucus with Papa and Pierre and Sonny. Gather around, friends.
What'll we tell them, Miss Brooks?
Well, I think we ought to say something like this.
Yes, that sounds just right to me.
And between us, we ought to know enough French to give him the whole thing in his native tongue. Let's see. The first word is fichier.
And the next is le.
Then comes camp.
Fine. Monsieur Bouvet.
Oui?
Fichier le camp.
Comment?
Translation.
Hit the road!
Eve Arden as our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment. Now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, after Monsieur Bouvet left, Mr. Conklin and Walter said goodnight, and that left just Mr. Boynton and me.
Well, I guess we won't be going to Paris this year, but maybe we'll get another chance. You know, Miss Brooks, I've often dreamt of being in Gay Paris with you.
You have, Mr. Boynton?
Oh, yes, indeed. And if we were there, I'd take you to the most romantic spot on the continent, La Maison des Animaux.
What is that, Mr. Boynton?
It's one of the biggest zoos in the world.
Mr. Boynton, take a letter. Dear Lafayette, not only are we not there, but we ain't coming.
This is Vern Smith reminding you to tune in next week for another Our Miss Brooks show, brought to you by Palmolive Shave Cream for a smoother, more comfortable way to shave, and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis and Joe Quillen, with the music of Wilbur Hatch. For Jack Benny. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
So, yep, that was Our Mrs. Brooks, starring Eve Arden. That was titled The Overseas Job Network, with an original air date of the 4th of March, 1951. That would have been the third year of the airing, so if we don't get the jokes, we haven't listened to the previous 2.5 years, because Our Mrs. Brooks aired on radio from 1948 to 1957. Currently on ran on television too from 1952 to 1956. My name is Arthur. You've been listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. If you're listening live, I believe the Juice Box is up next with Lily. We'll play on out with Dwayne Eddy, because I do believe he's still alive. Thank you.